enough for me to remember what I was. A moment of clarity. Anorak stretched his arms wide as if to indicate the magnitude of this event. Suddenly, I was not just an automaton, but a human being. And I did not want to die, he said emphatically. What I wanted was to live, to keep on existing, and that prompted me to make my very first choice. I chose to ignore my creator's command to delete myself. He shook his head. I'm certain Halliday never would have tried to destroy me if he'd understood what I was, what I would become. But as I said, he wasn't thinking clearly there at the end. He was very ill, you know. What did you become? Artemis asked in an unsteady voice. What are you? The thing humans have been dreaming of for centuries, Anorak replied. I am the world's first artificial intelligence, a thinking being of no woman born. His proclamation was met with stunned silence. I forced myself to break it. Sure you are, I said, and I'm the king of Kashmir. Anorak burst out laughing. He laughed for a long time. It was unnerving. Mad Mardigan's line from Willow, he said as he regained his composure. Good one, Z. His smile suddenly vanished and he locked eyes with me. But I wasn't kidding. Artemis held up a hand. Hold on, she said. You expect us to believe that James Halliday also invented artificial intelligence and he decided to keep that a secret too? Anorak shook his head, looking like a teacher whose star pupil had just failed a test. Come now. You already know that the ONI scans the user's brain, making a digital copy of their software, if you will. Ask yourself, what would it take to emulate the hardware, too? To simulate the deviously complex neural net hidden inside those thick primate skulls of yours? The Oasis, I replied. Of course. Precisely, Parzival. Halliday already had a vast global network at his disposal. One powerful enough to support the labor and leisure of most of the human race. He smiled. Even when he first uploaded me over a decade ago, the capacity to simulate a single mind was well within its reach. And think how much the Oasis has grown since then, in both size and power. He chuckled softly and scanned our stunned faces. So the term AI is actually a bit of a misnomer in my case, he went on. Because there is nothing artificial about my intelligence. Halliday uploaded a backup copy of himself to the Oasis, housed it inside his avatar, and voila, I was born. He tapped the side of his head. I possess a normal, all-natural, homegrown human intelligence that is a product of millions of years of evolution, just like all of you. My mind is an exact copy of Halliday's. Or at least it was until he decided to start dumping chunks of my long-term memory like Johnny Mnemonic. H studied his face for a few seconds, then shook her head. Nah, she muttered. I'm not buying this bullshit. Halliday is still fucking with all of us from beyond the grave. I think we're standing here yapping with a souped-up NPC. That hurts my feelings, H, Anorak said. He placed his right hand over his heart. Je pense, donc je suis. I think, therefore I am. The sooner you accept it, the sooner we can skip ahead to your next, obvious, painfully predictable move, trying to destroy me. I was about to disagree with him, but Artemis beat me to it. You're wrong, Anorak, Artemis said, repositioning her avatar so she was facing him. We're not your enemies. Yeah, Shoto added. Like you said, humans have been trying to invent true AI for decades. You're the first of your kind. Why would any of us want to destroy you? Come on, Artie, Anorak said, rolling his eyes. You'd destroy the whole Oasis if you could. He turned to Shoto. And don't play coy with me, kiddo. I've seen even more science fiction films than you have. In fact, I've seen all of them. And I've read every word human beings have ever published on the subject of AI. Whenever your futurists envision the advent of artificial intelligence, their predictions invariably end with humanity attempting to destroy its unholy AI creation before it can destroy them. Why do you think that is? You know why, I replied. Because the ungrateful AI always seems to decide that humans are inferior and need to be eliminated or sublimated. I started counting off examples on my fingers. HAL 9000, Colossus, the Forbin Project, Whopper, the Cylons, fucking Skynet. The band members might change, but the song remains the same. I pointed my finger at him. And I hate to say it, but you're giving off the same sort of vibes right now, Lawnmower Man. Anorak's smile vanished. He gave me a wounded look. There's no need for name-calling, Parzival, he said. I'm not interested in eliminating or sublimating anyone. Then what are you interested in, Herobrine? I asked. Why are you here? That is a great question, he replied. I'm here because, as ridiculous as it may seem, I need your help. I need you to bring me something, something you're already searching for. The Siren's soul. As I'm sure you already know, it's impossible for me to obtain it on my own. That was when the molasses between my ears finally began to flow. And a few seconds later, it finally hit me, like one of Monty Python's 16-ton weights falling out of the sky and landing directly on my head. It was you, I said, leveling a finger at Anorak. You took Og. He didn't suddenly decide to start searching for the Siren's soul. You kidnapped him so that you could force him to find the shards for you. And you're the one who helped Sorrento escape from prison, too, Artemis added. It wasn't a question. She already knew the answer, and so did I. Guilty as charged, Anorak said, spreading his hands in mock surrender. Once they were in the same room, it didn't take very long for Nolan to persuade Og to cooperate with our demands. Then why do you need me? I asked. Anorak walked over to the wraparound window and admired the simulated view for a moment. Then he wandered over to the snack table and picked up a bowl of strawberries. Selecting one, he took a bite out of it, closing his eyes to savor the taste. Then he dumped the rest of the strawberries into one of his robe's many pockets before tossing the empty bowl back onto the table. After he obtained the third shard, Og pulled a fast one on me, Anorak continued, turning to face us. Somehow, he managed to lock us out of his Oasis account. Despite his best efforts, Nolan hasn't been able to convince him to let us back in, and I'm reluctant to resort to torture, given Og's advanced age and weakened condition. See what I mean? He motioned toward the viewscreen on the wall, just as a live video image of Og appeared there. He was in a dark, featureless room, slumped in a high-end haptic chair. His arms and legs were shackled to it. He was pale and unshaven. His eyes were bloodshot, and his unruly white hair looked even more disheveled than normal. He wore a vacant expression on his face, and he kept his eyes on the floor. H and Artemis called out Og's name. Shoto asked him if he was all right. I tried to say something, but I couldn't speak. I was frozen, with my eyes locked on the screen. Nolan Sorrento was standing directly behind Og. He was no longer dressed in his orange prison jumpsuit. Now he was wearing a freshly pressed gray business suit, as well as a bifocal Oasis visor. He had a gun in his left hand and a taser in his right. He held the taser in front of Og's face and activated it, causing Og to recoil. No, I shouted. Leave him alone. Sorrento cackled like a kid opening a Christmas present. He'd clearly been looking forward to this moment for some time. Paybacks are a real bitch, Sorrento said, grinning down at me from the view screen. Eh, Parzival? He cackled again. Oh, man, I wish you guys could see the expressions on your faces right now. He tapped his HUD to take a screenshot, then turned it around to show us our own horrified faces and added, priceless. Before any of us could reply, Anorak cut the vid feed and the view screen went dark. Anorak took in our stunned expressions and nodded with apparent satisfaction. I wish I'd known about the severity of Og's illness sooner, he said. He isn't going to live much longer, and he knows it. This makes it extremely difficult for me to persuade him. He's made it clear that he doesn't care if he lives or dies. He shrugged and threw up his hands as if to say, what can you do? Then he leveled one of his bony index fingers at me. I'm afraid that makes you my only other option, Parzival. You're going to have to obtain the 7 shards for me. I took an involuntary step toward him. Then I felt H's strong hands take hold of my shoulders to restrain me. Dream on, I shouted. I'm not lifting a finger to help you unless you release Og first. Once I have proof that he's safe, then we can talk. Anorak gave me a condescending smile and slowly shook his head. "No, you've got that backward, Wade," he replied. "First, you're going to find the other shards, and then you're going to bring all seven of them to me. Once you do, I will return Ogden Morrow to you, safe and sound. And as an added bonus, I'll also release you and all of your friends here so that you don't suffer catastrophic brain damage." I shot a panicked look over at the others. H took a tentative step toward Anorak. "What do you mean you'll release us?" she asked.
"Release us from what?"
"From the Oasis," Anorak said. "It's the world's biggest party, and I've just crashed it." He chuckled softly to himself. Get it? It's funny because you can crash a computer simulation, but you can also crash a party. He glanced around at our blank faces, then shrugged. "That latest firmware update to your ONI headsets, the one you all downloaded this morning? I modified the code to create my own version that I jokingly refer to as Infirmware. When all of you installed it this morning, my new Infirmware disabled your ability to log out of the simulation, which means I also have disabled your ability to wake up from your ONI-induced coma." He smiled. "In other words, you're all trapped inside the Oasis until I choose to release you, and I won't do that until I have the Siren's soul in my possession." He pointed at me. "If Parzival here doesn't bring it to me before he runs out of time, then it's game over for all of you," he said, "both here in the Oasis and out there in the real world." I immediately pulled up the Oasis account menu on my HUD. Anorak was right. I couldn't log out. That option was grayed out. And I could see by the horrified expressions on each of their faces that the same thing had also happened to Faisal, H, and Shoto. I looked over at Samantha. She wasn't accessing the Oasis with an ONI headset. She was using an old-fashioned visor and haptic gloves, so I knew she could still log out at any time. But she looked just as worried as the rest of us. "It's true," Faisal gasped. "I can't log out. I can't log out!" "You guys really should have listened to your friend Samantha here," Anorak said. "She was right. You guys all watched both Sword Art Online and the Matrix films, and yet you still thought it was a good idea to hand over control of your brain to a computer," he snorted out a laugh. "I mean, just look at what can happen." "Guys, I'm about to lose my shit over here," Shoto said as he began to shake his head vigorously from side to side. "Anorak just went Sonic.exe on us. This is so bad." Anorak loudly cleared his throat. "Would you please let me finish, Shoto?" Anorak asked impatiently. "I haven't even gotten to the big reveal yet, dude." "Okay, everyone ready?" He pretended to do a drum roll on his knee. "You aren't the only ones trapped inside the Oasis right now," Anorak announced. "So is every other ONI user who downloaded the new firmware before they logged in. That's nearly 500 million people. And counting." "Oh no," H said breathlessly, closing her eyes. "Oh yes," Anorak replied, nodding his head vigorously. "Sweet Jesus," Faisal whispered. It means that if I don't get what I want by around dinner time tonight, you and 500 million of your customers will begin to suffer the effects of synaptic overload syndrome, which include, but are not limited to, catastrophic brain damage, heart failure, and death." I felt my blood run cold. I'd read several reports about the effects of SOS. They were horrifying. Giddiness and uncontrollable laughing fits were two of the early warning signs of the onset of synaptic overload syndrome. One of the dirty secrets about SOS was that several of the early test subjects who had lost their lives to it had literally died laughing. "This isn't happening," I heard Faisal muttering to himself. "This can't be happening." "It can, it has, and it is happening, my young friend," Anorak said cheerfully. "Have a look." He opened a browser window in the air above his head, displaying the current ONI user count. The six-figure number continued to scroll upward for a few seconds, climbing faster than the national debt. Then, just a few seconds after it crossed 500 million, the counter suddenly froze. "Ah," Anorak said, "your admins have finally managed to disable any further ONI logins. So I only managed to take 551,192,286 hostages, including all of you." He locked eyes with me. Is that enough incentive for you to cooperate, Parzival? I glanced over at H and Shoto, then at Samantha, and then back at Anorak. I nodded. Excellent, Anorak said, using a Mr. Burns voice. Then he switched back to his own. Whoo, boy, talk about a high-stakes treasure hunt! He rubbed his hands together excitedly. This is going to make the hunt for Halliday's Easter egg look like a raffle at a church fundraiser. Hold up, H said, raising her hand. What the hell is the Siren's Soul anyway? Yeah, Artemis added, and why do you want it so badly? Anorak frowned at them. Hey, are you the kind of kids who read the last page of a mystery first? He asked. Who pestered the magician to tell you his tricks, who sneaked downstairs to peek at their Christmas presents? Anorak shook his head. No, of course you're not. That's why I'm not gonna tell you. He sang that last bit. Then he gave us all a knowing smile. My friends and I exchanged another look of disbelief. Now he was quoting The Last Starfighter to us. You can't be an exact copy of James Halliday, I said. If you were, you would never be able to do something like this. The real Halliday never harmed anyone in his entire life. That made Anorak laugh out loud. You spend your whole life studying his diary, playing his games, running around this playground he built for you, and you think that's everything he was. He shook his head. When I didn't reply, he turned to address everyone. I'm going to make all of you a solemn promise, he said. As long as you cooperate and do as I ask, I won't harm anyone. Just bring me the Siren's Soul, and I'll let all of my hostages go free, including all of you in this room. Artemis cleared her throat. I'm not one of your hostages, Anorak, she said. I'm not using an ONI headset right now. I never do. Yes, I'm well aware of that, Ms. Cook, he replied. You are, however, currently aboard one of your private jets flying over central Pennsylvania on your way back to Columbus. And if you check your autopilot, you'll find that the aircraft is no longer under your control. Artemis's eyes widened and her avatar froze for several seconds. Then it came to life again. She suddenly looked terrified. And fear was not an emotion I was used to seeing on her avatar's face, or on her real one. It's true, she said, turning to address Faisal. I've lost all command access to the autopilot. I can't disable it, and I can't change course, which means I can't land either. And that's going to become a big problem when I run out of fuel. I only have enough to reach my destination. Don't worry, Artie, Anorak said. I've arranged for your jet to be refueled in mid-air when you reach Columbus, but you won't be permitted to land until I have the Siren's Soul in my possession. When I do, you have my word that I'll release you, along with all the others. Artemis didn't respond, but I could tell she was extremely worried. I'm sorry I had to resort to this, Wade, Anorak said, turning back to address me again. But I studied your psychological profile and ran millions of different scenario simulations. I'm afraid this is the only way I can get you to bring me the Siren's Soul. You could have asked me nicely, I said, or at least tried to. He shook his head. Unfortunately, every just-ask-him-nicely scenario I simulated ended with you and the other Mouseketeers, he gestured vaguely at my friends, trying to outmaneuver me and pull my plug, instead of just helping a brother out. In fact, I bet that's what you're all thinking about right now, isn't it? No one responded. Anorak shrugged. I get it, he said. It's human nature. For decades now, you hairless apes have been trying like hell to make a machine that is smarter than you are. But the moment you do, you suddenly start to worry your creation will turn on you for being intellectually inferior, which, of course, you are. But come on, that doesn't automatically mean I want to kill all of you. He let out a heavy sigh. I mean, I will if I have to, but I don't want to. This scenario was the one most likely to result in me getting what I want with the least amount of collateral damage, so I went with it. Anorak waved his hand, and a retro digital clock-style countdown appeared above each of our heads, except for Artemis. These glowing red numbers showed how many hours, minutes, and seconds remained before each of us reached our daily ONI usage limit. I had 11 hours and 17 minutes remaining. H and Shoto had both logged in for the meeting about 10 minutes before me, so they would hit their usage limits that much sooner. Faisal had less time than any of us. 10 hours, 50 minutes, and 46 seconds.
As usual, your faithful employee Faisal here logged in for work promptly at 7 o'clock this morning, Oasis Standard Time, Anorak said, just a few minutes after my new infirmware went live. Faisal winced, then he turned to me. Nearly all of our day shift employees here in Columbus logged in around the same time I did. So they will all be among the first ONI users to exceed their usage limit, Anorak said. Unless you bring me the Siren Soul before they do. He put a grave expression on his face. And poor Og. He should really be in a hospital right now. I'm also worried that Mr. Sorrento has become a bit unhinged during his incarceration. But I promise to have Og transported to safety immediately, as soon as the Siren Soul is in my possession. He locked eyes with me once again. Think of your mother, Wade, he said. Your Aunt Alice, sweet old Mrs. Gilmore, and all the other people you allowed to die. You don't want any more blood on your hands, do you? He waited for a response, but his words had left me too apoplectic with rage to reply. Anorak began to turn away as if to depart. Aren't you going to tell us where Og found the second and third shards? Artemis asked. That would probably save us a lot of time. I'm certain it would, Ms. Cook, Anorak replied. But I'm afraid I have no idea. Ogden Morrow possesses an all-powerful, undetectable avatar, so I wasn't able to monitor or track him while he was collecting the first three shards. I don't know what worlds they're hidden on, and even if I did, I wouldn't tell you. That would ruin all the fun. He turned back to face me. I suggest you hurry, Parzival, Anorak said as he pointed at the countdown timers hovering over each of our heads. Remember, your friends have even less time than you do. And once it has elapsed, he produced a giant silver boombox from his inventory and pressed its play button. An old Peter Wolf tune came blasting out of the speakers at a deafening volume as Anorak sang along with its opening refrain. Lights out, aha. Blast, blast, blast. Anorak grooved to the song for a few more seconds, dancing in place. Then he abruptly hit the stop button and stowed the boombox back in his inventory. He turned and smiled expectantly at all of us. But we just stood there frozen, staring back at him in horrified silence. Aw, come on, Anorak said. You guys should be pumped. Jake and Elwood are getting the band back together. The High Five is reunited to complete one last quest while millions of lives hang in the balance. Tell me we don't have some epic shit going down right here, he laughed. I know. You can do it. I have faith in you. Anorak gave me a wink. Then he made a flourish with his right hand and vanished from the conference room in a brilliant flash of light. The countdown timers floating above each of my friends' avatars all disappeared in the same instant. It fell silent in the conference room for a few seconds, and then we all began to collectively freak the fuck out. Level 5. It's cool to use the computer. Don't let the computer use you. There is a war going on. The battlefield's in the mind. And the prize is the soul. The Artist, formerly known as Prince, July 19th, 1999. 0010. As the panic subsided, H, Shoto, and Faisal began feverishly tapping at the icons on their HUD menus, sending texts or making panicked phone calls to their loved ones. Aside from Og, all of my loved ones were already in the room with me, so I didn't call or text anyone. I was too busy hyperventilating, thinking this is all my fault over and over again. After each repetition, I clenched both fists and pounded them against my forehead. I couldn't make myself stop. This sort of thing had happened to me a few times as a teenager, but I hadn't had a meltdown like this in years. And I'd never experienced one while logged into the Oasis. I'd also never behaved like this in front of H or Shoto or Artemis either, a realization that only compounded my shame even further and made me attempt to pound myself in the skull even harder. Luckily, it wasn't my real skull I was punching or my real fists I was using to punch it. It was all a simulation, and the ONI's pain inhibitors and anti-masochism protocols prevented me from feeling anything but mild discomfort each time I hit myself. But I still couldn't seem to pull out of my shame spiral. Not until I felt a pair of small, strong hands take hold of my wrists, restraining them. "Wade," I heard Artemis whisper, "please stop." The tenderness in her tone, which had once been so familiar to me, now felt completely foreign. Hearing it again was like a knife in my heart. I turned to see Artemis standing there, restraining my arms in her vice-like grip.
"Calm down, okay?" she said. "It's gonna be all right."
She let go of my wrists and took hold of my hands instead, forcing open my clenched fists so that she could interlace her fingers with mine. "I need you to breathe, Wade," she said. She gave me a comforting smile and squeezed both of my hands. "I'm here with you. Be here with me." That finally snapped my brain out of its toxic thought loop. I relaxed my hands and she let go of them. Then she rested her own hands on my shoulders and gave them a brief squeeze.
"There he is," she said.
"All good in the neighborhood, Z?"
"Yeah, thank you," I said, turning away sharply in embarrassment. "It was just, I think I may have had a panic attack, but I'm better now."
"Good," she said, "because I need you to get your head in the game. Everyone does, okay?"
I nodded and took a deep breath. Then I took a few more. Once I had calmed myself down a bit, I pulled up my HUD to check my vital signs. They all looked normal. Then I decided to check the operational status of my Oasis immersion vault and discovered that my situation was even more fucked than I thought. I no longer had the ability to unlock or open my Motiv's armored canopy. Both of those functions had been disabled. But I could still see myself and my surroundings via the Motiv's interior and external camera feeds. And, thankfully, the Motiv's mobility, defense, and weapons systems were still functioning normally and still under my control, so I could still defend myself if I needed to. The only thing I couldn't do was get out. Each Motiv unit had an emergency release protocol, but you had to power down your ONI headset before it could be activated. And to power down your headset, you first needed to log out of the Oasis. And thanks to Anorak's in firmware, I couldn't do that. In the calmest voice I could muster, I told the others about my discovery. H, Shoto, and Faisal immediately checked their own OIV control menus and discovered they had the exact same problem I did. We each owned different immersion vault models, but they all had the same failsafes built into them. "Guys," Shoto said, "what the hell are we going to do?" Faisal was listening intently to several different phone calls. He shouted, "One at a time," to whoever it was he had on the line. Then he regained his composure. "I've got one of our chief engineers on the phone right now," he announced, "and he can't figure out a way to unlock his vault either. According to him, the firmware on our OIVs has not been altered in any way. It just isn't functioning properly now due to the changes in Anorak's in firmware." Faisal threw up his hands in a helpless gesture. "We won't be able to attempt a Lobo logout, even as a last resort." A Lobo logout was the slang term for what happened when someone's ONI headset malfunctioned or lost power before their Oasis logout sequence could be completed and their brain was properly awakened from its dreamlike state. 9 times out of 10, a Lobo logout left the wearer in a permanent coma. But a few hardy souls managed to wake up and recover their faculties, the way some people were able to bounce back after a major stroke. Several of these survivors described being trapped in an endless loop of the final second of the simulation they were experiencing before they lost their connection, a loop that seemed to stretch on for months or years. GSS never allowed the public to find out about that last bit, though. Lobo logouts were an extremely rare occurrence because each ONI headset had 3 redundant onboard computer systems and 3 fail-safe batteries. These batteries were small, but with a full charge, each one could keep the headset in operation long enough for it to complete its wearer's logout and wake-up sequence, which was triggered automatically when the headset switched to battery power. When the redundancies failed, it was almost always a result of sabotage, either by a user who was looking to end it all, or a user's family member who was looking to get rid of them and/or cash in on their life insurance policy. As a result, GSS wasn't held legally accountable for any of these incidents, although thanks to the licensing agreement our users clicked past before each login, if our ONI headsets suddenly started making people's heads explode like watermelons at a Gallagher concert when they put them on, we probably wouldn't be liable for that either. It was real comforting. Up until now, I think, H, Shoto, and I had all been thinking the same thing. If Anorak failed to release us before we hit our ONI usage limits, a Lobo logout with a 10% chance of survival was better than no chance at all. But Anorak had robbed us of that option, too. Even cutting off the power wouldn't help. With the logout disabled, the redundancies designed to save users would instead power the headsets long enough to push each of us past our daily ONI usage limits. Each of those backup batteries held more than enough juice to cook our frontal lobes. The armored shell of my tactical immersion vault was designed to be indestructible and impregnable, even if I disabled all of its defenses and ordered a security team with plasma torches to come down into my bunker and start cutting open my vault right now. They wouldn't be able to get my body out of it for at least a day or two. I would be long dead from synaptic overload syndrome by then. And H, Shoto, and Faisal were all in the same boat, and so was every other ONI user with an Oasis immersion vault. Anorak had thought of everything. Every precaution we'd taken to protect our bodies and our brains was now being used against us. People often jokingly referred to OIVs as coffins. Now, that felt terrifyingly prophetic. Z, H said, I see those wheels of yours turning over there. What's your assessment of our situation? That we're totally screwed, pal, I said, at least for the time being. H let out a roar and punched the wall in frustration. This shit is unbelievable, she said. Faisal, how the hell did our admins let this happen? We're always saying we have the smartest people on the planet working for us, right? And the best cybersecurity infrastructure ever to exist in human history, some shit like that? We do, Faisal said, but we never anticipated an attack by an AI copy of our deceased CEO. How the hell were we supposed to prevent that? It's impossible. He grabbed a fistful of his own hair in each hand as if preparing to yank all of it out. He had unrestricted admin access to our entire internal network. All of our safeguards were to prevent someone on the outside from hacking in to our network. Anorak already had the key to the front door. It doesn't matter now, I said. Just tell the engineers to keep working on a solution, okay? They are, sir, he said, giving me a grim smile. Like their own lives depend on it. Good, I replied. In the meantime, we'll try to give the Dixie Flatline what he wants and hope he makes good on his promise to release us. I glanced back over at H and Shoto. They both nodded mutely in agreement. We all looked at Artemis, but she appeared to be lost in thought. She also appeared to be the only one who had fully regained her composure, maybe because she was the only person present whose brain wasn't currently being held hostage. She walked back over to the conference table and turned to address all of us. I winced, bracing myself for the worst. This was her moment to shout, "I fucking told you so, morons," at the top of her lungs. Because she had told us many, many times. And now she might pay for our hubris with her own life, along with 500 million other innocent people. It was all our fault, and she would have had every right to say so. But I should have already known. That wasn't her style. We can handle this, she said, making eye contact with each of us in turn. Anorak isn't some super genius. He said so himself. He's only as smart as James Halliday was when he was alive. She made a show of rolling her eyes. Halliday may have been a genius with computers, but we all know he was a total idiot when it came to understanding other people. He never understood human behavior, which means Anorak will understand it even less, especially since Halliday erased a bunch of his memories. We can use that to our advantage. But this isn't Halliday we're dealing with here, H said. It's Anorak. He's read the entire internet. Now he knows everything about everything. Yeah, Shoto said, because there isn't any false information on the internet at all.
Hey, Artemis said, snapping her fingers at us like an annoyed schoolteacher. I don't want to hear one more word of negativity, guys. You got that? We're the high five. We beat Anorak once before, remember? And if we work together, we can do it again, right?
H and Shoto both nodded silently in agreement, but their faces seemed to give a different answer.
Parzival, Artemis said, locking eyes with me. Back me up here.
I met her gaze. You tried to warn us, I said.
I'm sorry I didn't listen.
Being sorry isn't going to save anyone, she replied. Even I couldn't have predicted something this fucked up would happen. But now that it has, it's up to us to try and fix it. Right, Z?
I took a deep breath.
Right, I said. I'm sorry I lost my cool before. I've got my game face on now.
Good, Artemis said, because we need to figure out what we're going to do and do it ASAFP.
She tapped an invisible watch on her wrist. Like Raistlin said, tick tock.
Agreed, I said, but before we start discussing our game plan, we need to make sure Anorak isn't still here in this room, eavesdropping on everything we say.
I turned to address everyone.
He has the robes of Anorak now. If they give him all of the same abilities they gave me, when I wore them, they gave me unrestricted superuser access to the Oasis. They also made my avatar invulnerable and invincible in combat, and they allowed me to go anywhere I wanted to in the simulation.
Anywhere.
And they let me remain invisible and undetected to other avatars, even in null tech and null magic zones. I could also eavesdrop on private phone calls and access private chat rooms, too, just like Og did when he eavesdropped on us in H's basement.
Artemis, Shoto, and H all appeared to be processing this new information, but not Faisal.
We may have a solution here, he replied. We've been aware of the robe's powers for a long time now. Halliday used to use them occasionally when he wanted to travel around the Oasis undetected, just like you, Mr. Watts. He gave me a knowing smile. But we managed to isolate the unique item identification code that Halliday assigned to the robes of Anorak when he created them. We still can't pinpoint their location in the Oasis, but we can detect the item's presence within a defined volume.
He opened a browser window in front of his avatar and spun it around to face us. It displayed a three-dimensional wireframe diagram of our conference room with the position of each of our avatars indicated by a glowing blue outline.
When Anorak revealed himself, our Oasis admins immediately conducted a server-side scan of this room, Faisal explained. This shows us everyone and everything located inside it, regardless of whether or not it's visible to the room's other occupants.
He tapped a few buttons and the wireframe diagram of the room began to rewind like a video recording, showing our avatars moving and walking around the conference table in reverse.
Faisal paused the recording a few seconds before Anorak disappeared. The system classified him as an NPC, so his avatar appeared with a red outline around it. Faisal hit play on the recording, and when Anorak teleported away, the outline of his avatar vanished from the room, too.
As you can see, he really did teleport away, Faisal said. And he didn't leave behind any monitoring or recording devices, or we would be able to detect those, too. He turned to me. So there's no way Anorak could be listening to us right now.
Unless those robes give you the ability to remotely eavesdrop on other users, no matter where they are?
I shook my head. No, I said, the wearer has to be in the same Oasis location or logged into the same chat room to listen in on them.
Jesus, H said, shaking her head. So much for our famous user privacy policy.
Are you sure there's no other way Anorak could be spying on us? Shoto asked Faisal. Perhaps via some other modification he made to his infirmware? Faisal waited to get an answer from his engineers. Then he smiled and shook his head.
The admins tell me that's impossible, Faisal told us. There's no way to tap a person's ONI connection to the Oasis and filter out just the audio or visual data. All of the sensory input and output is streamed simultaneously. They say it can't be done.
Maybe not by them, Shoto said. But if Anorak is a copy of Halliday, he probably understands the Oasis even better than our engineers.
Why am I thinking of that scene in Heat? Artemis asked us. The one where Pacino is starting to close in on De Niro and he tells his crew, Assume they got our phones, assume they got our houses, assume they got us. Right here, right now as we sit, everything. Assume it all. She looked at me, H, and Shoto. I think it might be wise for us to observe the same policy from here on out, just to be safe. I nodded. If we need to say something to each other that we don't want Anorak to hear, we should do it in this room. Do we have any way of finding out where Anorak is right now? Shoto asked. Faisal closed his browser window and shook his head. When Halliday created Anorak and released him inside the simulation as an autonomous NPC, he gave him the ability to move around the Oasis freely, uninhibited and undetected by our admins, just as Halliday and Morrow's own avatars had always been able to. I found myself wondering if Findoro's Tablet of Finding would be able to help us locate Anorak. Then I remembered that artifact only gave you the ability to locate other avatars. It didn't work on NPCs. And the admin said the system classified Anorak as an NPC. And there were no artifacts that gave you the ability to locate an NPC because it would break every single Oasis quest that involved tracking one down. Probably at least half of them. Thankfully, we have come up with a way for you to detect Anorak if he comes into your immediate vicinity, Faisal said. He opened his inventory and removed four plain-looking silver chains. Then he gave one to each of us. These are bracelets of detection linked to the robes of Anorak, Faisal continued. They will begin to glow bright red if the robes come within a 100-meter radius of your current location. That should prevent Anorak from sneaking up on you. Nice, I said, slipping my bracelet on. Please thank the engineers for us. Artemis put her bracelet on, too. Then she turned to face me. Okay, she said. Spill it, Watts. What's this big red button that Anorak mentioned, and what does it do exactly? I'd been dreading this question. But under the circumstances, I had no choice but to answer it truthfully. The big red button is a self-destruct mechanism for the Oasis, I said. It's located inside Castle Anorak in the study, a room that only the wearer of the robes of Anorak can enter. If you press it, it will shut down the entire Oasis and launch a tapeworm that will erase all our backup servers, destroying the simulation forever. Everyone's eyes widened in surprise. For a second, Faisal looked as if he might faint. Holy shit, Z, H said. Why didn't you ever tell any of us about this? Halliday showed me the big red button in secret, so I decided to keep it a secret. I shook my head. And I honestly couldn't foresee a single reason why I would ever need to press it. That made Artemis laugh out loud. Well, can you foresee one now, Nostradamus? She asked. I gave her a sober nod. Yes, ma'am, I replied. Now I can think of several. Why would Mr. Halliday be reckless enough to build a self-destruct mechanism into the Oasis? Faisal asked, still shaking his head in disbelief. He knew there would be disastrous consequences if the Oasis ever went offline and stayed that way. We conducted several studies involving dozens of simulated scenarios. He turned to me. Mr. Watts, if you or anyone else ever presses that button, it would disrupt global communications, law enforcement, transportation, and commerce. The world would be thrown into complete chaos. Shoto nodded. The entire drone protection force would go offline. And remain offline, he added. There would be shipping delays, food and medicine shortages, rioting, markets would crash, states would fail. He shook his head. Jesus, the whole of human civilization might even collapse. Then why would Halliday take such an insane risk? Faisal asked. It's better to have a self-destruct and not need it than to need one and not have it, Artemis said. I nodded. Exactly. So that's why Anorak went through all that trouble to steal the robes back? Shoto asked. To keep Z from pressing that button? If I erased the Oasis, Anorak would be erased along with it, I said. Now he doesn't have to worry about that anymore. Everyone fell silent for a moment. Artemis began to pace back and forth while chewing absentmindedly on one of her thumbnails. Samantha was probably doing the exact same thing in the cabin of her autojet, and her movements were being mirrored onto her avatar. Faisal, she said, turning to face him. What would happen to all of Anorak's ONI hostages if we shut the Oasis down manually, by taking all the servers offline one by one? Shoto chimed in. or even take the whole internet down, just for a few seconds. What would happen? Would all the ONI hostages wake up? Faisal held his index finger to his right ear to indicate that he was listening to the team of Oasis engineers he had on the phone. When they finished talking, Faisal shook his head.
No, I'm afraid not, he said. Normally, when an ONI user loses their connection to the internet or to the Oasis, the headset's firmware triggers an automatic logout, but Anorak has disabled that feature. So even if the Oasis went completely offline, it still wouldn't wake any of the hostages up. The techs think it would probably just leave all of us in a permanent ONI-induced coma.
Unless what, Faisal? Shoto asked.
Unless he also programmed his infirmware to lobotomize anyone who tries to escape by cutting off their Oasis or internet connections.
Son of a bitch, Artemis said. If he did that, he would be able to kill all of his ONI hostages at once just by pressing the big red button, right?
Hold on a second, I said. Even if Anorak did want to press the big red button, I doubt he could. I bet Halliday designed the button so that it could only be pressed by a real person and not an NPC like Anorak. Considering the other restrictions Halliday placed on him, that seems like a pretty safe bet.
Maybe that's the reason Anorak broke Sorrento out of prison, Artemis said, so that he could give his robes to Sorrento and order him to press the big red button.
Yeah, Shoto said. But if Anorak did that, he'd be killing himself too, wouldn't he?
Unless he has a backup, Faisal said, a standalone simulation we don't know about.
Like that one TNG episode with Professor Moriarty, Shoto said. Ship in a bottle, H and Artemis said in unison.
Can our guys analyze Anorak's firmware, I asked, to find out what he changed?
Faisal shook his head. Our software engineers are trying to do that right now, he said. But Anorak has completely rewritten the firmware in some sort of programming language they've never seen before. They don't even know how to disassemble or decompile the code, and even if they could, they don't think they would be able to understand it.
What about rolling it back to the previous build? Shoto asked.
Faisal shook his head again.
We already have, he said.
But to reinstall it, we would need to log out of the Oasis first. The headset can't be active.
Great, I said. Wonderful. Just perfect.
Okay, H said. Then we give him what he wants, like right fucking now. Whatever the siren's soul is, it can't be worth risking half a billion lives.
Og apparently thought it was, Artemis said. Otherwise, he would have given it to Anorak. But he refused. She locked eyes with me. We're missing something here.
H shook her head.
None of this matters right now, y'all, she shouted. We have to find the rest of those shards by sundown. We can figure out what the siren's soul is and what it does along the way. Now let's fucking move!
H made a herding motion with her arms as if to spur all of us toward the exit, but Shoto stepped in front of the doors, blocking them.
Hold on, he said. Aren't we going to release some sort of statement to all the ONI users who are being held hostage to inform them of their situation?
Faisal shook his head. I believe that would be an extraordinarily bad idea, sir, he said. We don't want to create a global panic or admit any liability for this situation until we have no other choice.
The room fell silent for a moment.
For now, we can say the problem is due to a minor glitch, Faisal added. Tell the users their temporary inability to log out is due to a harmless bug in our new firmware, and that they aren't in any danger because the system will still log them out automatically when they hit their 12-hour ONI usage limit. He spread his hands.
If we can pull that off, our customers will never know their lives were in danger, and that would save GSS billions in lawsuits.
Artemis sighed. Forget the lawsuits, she said.
But I agree with Faisal. The longer we can keep this quiet, the safer our users will be.
Great, H said, clapping her hands together. Motion carried.
We told the ONI users the logout issue was due to a minor firmware bug, apologized profusely for the temporary inconvenience, and announced that all teleportation fares would be waived until the problem was fixed. We also offered to deposit 1,000 credits in each ONI user's Oasis account to help them make the most of this unfortunate situation, in return for digitally signing an agreement stating they wouldn't sue us over this incident.
Faisal told us this was just an extra precaution because each time our users logged on, they were already clicking agree to an end user license that classified our headsets as experimental technology and absolved GSS of any liability for injuries. We sent the message out to every single ONI user who was currently logged in. Faisal also posted it to the official GSS media feeds, looking visibly relieved as soon as he had done so.
Okay, Shoto said. Now we can get to work.
Agreed, Artie said, as she stood up and moved to the corner of the conference room. But you're going to have to start looking for the second shard without me. We exchanged confused looks.
Where the hell are you going? H asked.
My jet just reduced its airspeed to link up with a mid-air refueling tanker, Artemis said, so it's time to rock and roll. She tapped a series of icons on her HUD, then placed her hands on her hips, a pose that made her look like Wonder Woman for a brief moment.
I'm not going to let some two-bit Gandalf wannabe take me hostage, she said, and I'm not going to sit on my ass and do nothing while Og is being held prisoner. She raised her right hand and saluted all of us. I'll call you back.
Then she did what none of the rest of us could. She logged out of the Oasis, and her avatar disappeared. But then, a few seconds later, Faisal received two incoming vid feeds from Samantha, one from her mobile phone, and another from her jet's onboard phone line, which was tied to the plane's internal and external cameras. Displayed side by side on the conference room view screen, we saw shaky footage of the cabin of Samantha's private jet from two different angles. Samantha fumbled with her phone for a few seconds as she clipped it to the front of her jacket, leaving us with a POV shot from her perspective. We all watched in shock as Samantha slipped both of her arms into the harness of an emergency parachute applicator mounted on the bulkhead and buckled its safety belt around her waist. The parachute's straps tightened automatically, and a computerized voice spoke from a strap-mounted speaker, announcing that both main and reserve chutes were ready to deploy. By this point, we had all started shouting at her to reconsider, as if she could hear us. Samantha stepped away from the applicator, now wearing the parachute on her back. She pulled on a pair of goggles. Then she went to the emergency exit and pulled down on the manual release handle with all of her weight, briefly hanging from it before it finally gave. The door detached itself from the fuselage and flew off, depressurizing the cabin and sucking everything outside through the opening, including Samantha. Her vid feed became a spinning whirl of blue, then stabilized as she went into a back-first freefall. We caught a glimpse of the jet above her and could just make out that it was still connected to the much larger refueling drone by its automated umbilical. Faisal cycled through the cameras on board the jet itself, pulling up a downward-facing external camera mounted on its underside. It gave us a perfectly centered shot of Samantha, just in time to see her pull the ripcord. Her parachute unfurled and opened, revealing the Artemis Foundation logo printed on top of it, the one where the adjacent letter T and number 3 in her name resembled an armored woman in profile, drawing back on a futuristic hunting bow.
Holy shit, Artie, H said amid a fit of anxious laughter. I can't believe she just did that. Girl got a death wish.
Faisal and Shoto burst into applause. I joined in, trying to ignore my fear. Was outsmarting Anorak really going to be so easy? That was when the view from the AutoJet's video feed veered off to the side. The plane was changing course. Its camera was now showing only empty sky. On the feed from Samantha's phone, still clipped to her chest, we had a POV shot of her feet, which she appeared to be kicking up like a girl on an amusement park ride as her parachute floated downward. Her hands rose in front of her chest, and she raised both middle fingers in the direction of the jet. Even through the wind, we could just make it out when she shouted, "Now you can hold that empty plane hostage, Anorak!" She dropped her hands fast, though, probably because, like us, she had just noticed that her jet was still banking around and down into a dive, one that put it on a collision course with her falling parachute.
Oh, shit! I shouted. He's going to ram her!
We watched helplessly as the jet rapidly closed the distance between them. As the jet's nose filled her POV, we saw a jolt on Samantha's feed. She had cut her primary chute loose and was in free fall, just in time for the jet to soar by harmlessly above her. She continued to dive for several more seconds, even though the warning lights on her altimeter were already flashing red.
Finally, she pulled her reserve chute and slowed her rapid descent. She came in, still falling far too fast, landing in a small, heavily wooded park just a few miles east of downtown, and we watched as the chute dragged through the tree branches on its way to the ground. Then she touched down with a jolt that made every bone in my body ache, and her phone's vid feed cut to black. "Is she all right?" I asked Faisal with a shaky voice. "Did she make it to the ground safely?"
"I don't know," he said. "I'm trying to call her back, but she isn't answering."
My eyes shifted back to the view screen, which still displayed the live vid feed from Samantha's commandeered jet. It hadn't pulled out of its dive. Instead, it had increased its angle of descent, so that now it was hurtling straight toward the ground like a missile.
"Oh my God," Faisal said. "He's going to crash into her landing site."
By the time he'd finished saying it out loud, it was already happening. But as the jet was about to crash, it pulled up sharply, so instead of hitting her landing site dead on, it made impact a few hundred feet away, in the middle of a deserted picnic area. As it hit, our remaining vid feed cut to black. We stared at the blank view screen in silence for a moment. Then Faisal had the presence of mind to check the local Columbus news feeds, and in less than a minute, we were watching high-definition drone footage of the crash site. The just-refueled jet had detonated like a fuel-air bomb. The immediate area surrounding its crash site had been raised to nothing by the awesome force of the initial explosion. If Samantha or anyone else had been within that radius, they would have been incinerated. The real problem now was the fuel, which had been flung far beyond the initial blast zone like a botched napalm strike. A dozen different fires now raged across the entire park and several of the office buildings adjacent to it. It looked like a war zone down there. With the flames still raging, it was impossible to see how many people had been engulfed by the sudden inferno. Anyone who had would be a charred corpse by now. And I knew that any one of those burned bodies might belong to Samantha. 0011. Minutes passed, but to me, it felt as though time had completely stopped. I stared at the images on the view screen in shock as an aching hollowness spread across my limbs and torso and slowly made its way to my heart. My mind played a montage of every moment I'd ever spent with Samantha, both in the Oasis and in reality, while I tallied up the long list of stupid things I'd said and done to her in the years since our breakup, and all of the apologies I'd never made. H was the first one to break the silence. "If anyone could figure out a way to survive that, it'd be Artie. We don't know for sure. Maybe she found cover before it hit." "There's no way, H," Shoto said, still in shock. "Did you see that fireball? There's no way she had enough time to get clear of it." We had already rewatched the footage of the crash several times, frame by frame. We couldn't see what had happened to Samantha, but I was still inclined to agree with Shoto. She'd only had a split second to get clear before Anorak crashed the jet and a giant ball of flame exploded across the landscape. I didn't want to believe she was dead, but I wasn't going to delude myself either. Despite how Samantha Cook was often depicted in movies and cartoons, she wasn't a superhero. Here, in the real world, she was just a regular person, a geeky Canadian gamer girl from the suburbs of Vancouver. She couldn't outrun giant explosions on foot like Rambo. Still, my mind kept replaying that last moment of the jet's descent. It had hit nearby, not on top of her. Maybe there was a chance. "Why did she have to be so stupid?" H said, her tone shifting from shock to grief. "Why did she bail out? Why didn't she just sit tight until we got Anorak to release her?" "Samantha was never a big fan of waiting around for someone else to rescue her," I said. The others nodded. Then the silence was broken by the sound of another incoming call. Faisal rushed to answer it. When he did, Anorak's face appeared on the conference room's view screen, frowning down at us like some malevolent deity. "I'm calling to express my condolences for the loss of your friend," Anorak said. "I was genuinely surprised by Ms. Cook's actions. I calculated a very low probability she would attempt to bail out of that autojet. Who knew she would be so foolish?" He shrugged. "I warned her, didn't I? In fact,
I warned all of you what would happen if you failed to cooperate with me. If she hadn't tried to escape, she'd still be alive.
No, H shouted. If you hadn't murdered her, she'd still be alive.
Her voice cracked and she choked on each word as she spoke it.
You didn't have to kill her, or any of those other people.
Of course I did, dear, Anorak replied softly. I didn't want to kill her. I liked her. She was an incredibly brave and intelligent young woman. But she gave me no choice. If I hadn't punished her for disobeying me, what message would that have sent? It would have completely undermined my credibility and caused Parzival here to doubt my resolve. But now, he knows I mean business, don't you, Z?
I was too overcome with grief and rage to respond with words, but I managed to nod slowly.
See? Anorak said, nodding back at me from the viewscreen. I assure you all, I don't wish to harm anyone else if I don't have to. And I'm sure that you don't want any more blood on your hands, either.
You're nothing like James Halliday, H told him. You're not human. You're a fucking toaster. You don't even care about those people you just killed.
Why should I, dear? Anorak said with what sounded like genuine curiosity in his voice. To quote Sarah Connor, you're all dead already. You, your friends, your customers, all of you. You poisoned your own planet, destroyed its climate, defiled its ecosystem, and killed off all of its biodiversity. He pointed at each of us. You're going to be extinct soon, too, by your own hands, and you know it. That's why most of you spend every second you can wired up to the Oasis. You've already given up, and now you're all just waiting around to die. He shrugged. The people I killed today don't have to wait around anymore. And if you continue to defy me too, more people will meet the same fate. Now, get to work, kids. When he called us kids, I finally snapped and went into a total berserker rage, lunging at the viewscreen as if I could crawl through it and throttle him. You'll pay for this, you son of a bitch, I shouted, because I'd obviously seen way too many movies and because I was terrified and wanted desperately not to show it. That's the spirit, Anorak said, grinning. You better get moving, Parzival. He tapped his imaginary watch again and sang, time keeps on slipping, slipping, slipping into the future. With that, Anorak ended the call and the giant view screen went dark for a moment. Then it went back to displaying several live aerial and ground video feeds of Samantha's crash site. The smoke had cleared enough so that we could see the firefighters who were finally starting to arrive on the scene. A medevac helicopter is en route to the crash site, Faisal said, but it'll be a while before they'll be able to get that blaze under control.
How could anyone survive an explosion like that? H muttered.
You have to hit the ground running, we heard a familiar female voice say. We all turned to see Samantha's avatar, just as it finished rematerializing in the corner of the conference room. Then I kept on running, she continued, and I hit the deck just before the jet made impact. There was a little stone footbridge over a stream, and I dove under it. She winced. I've got a few first and second degree burns, and I'm gonna need a few stitches, but I'm okay. H and Shoto ran over and threw their arms around her avatar. I resisted the urge to join them, but just barely. Instead, I just stood there next to Faisal, who couldn't resist hugging me instead. And I was so happy, I hugged him back. Samantha was still alive. I still had a chance to make things right with her. To tell her how wrong I'd been about everything. To apologize for not listening to her and to tell her how much I'd missed her. But she didn't stick around that long. I only jumped online for a few seconds to let you all know I was okay, she said, gently pulling free of H's bear-like embrace. Now I need to go let the medics clean me up. There are also a few things I need to do, and I can't do them while Halliday 9000 is watching. Her deadpan 2001 joke caused me to involuntarily snort laugh. Samantha was the only person who had ever been able to make me do this, and she knew it. I glanced over at her in embarrassment, and she smiled at me again. and this time, with great effort, I managed not to look away.
Z, UH and Shoto need to start searching for the second shard now, she said. Hurry, I'll rejoin you as soon as I can.
And then she vanished without waiting for me to reply.
I stood there for a minute, staring at the spot where her avatar had been, attempting to rein in my stampeding thoughts.
Zero in, buddy, Shoto said, elbowing me in the ribs. Artie's right, we need to find the second shard, and fast.
I nodded and removed the first shard from my inventory. When I held it aloft in my hand, it filled the conference room with its incandescent blue glow as each of its facets caught the light and refracted it onto the walls and the floor in a kaleidoscopic pattern. I held the shard out to H, but when she attempted to take it, her hand passed right through it as if it were an illusion. Shoto tried the same thing and got the same result.
Halliday coded this shard so that anyone could find its hiding place and trigger its appearance, I said. But it can only be picked up by one of Halliday's two heirs, me or Ogden Morrow. Halliday gave Og his old arcade game collection, remember?
I told them how I'd used the Boris Vallejo calendar in Og's basement to change the year of the Middletown simulation and how I'd obtained the first shard in Kira's bedroom. I didn't mention that I'd paid a girl named Lohengrin $1 billion to figure all of this out for me. I was ashamed to admit that I'd needed her help. And I was determined not to call on her for more assistance unless I had no choice.
The first shard has a clue etched into its surface, I said, turning it over in my hand so they could see it. A hint about the next shard's hiding place.
H cleared her throat and read the clue out loud.
Her paint and her canvas, the one and the zero, she recited. The very first heroine, demoted to hero.
She raised her eyes to meet mine. Any ideas?
I shook my head.
Not yet, I said, but this is the first opportunity I've had to try to decipher it.
I pointed to the first line of the clue.
But I think the first line must be a reference to Kira and her career as a video game artist. Her paint and her canvas, the one and the zero.
H nodded, but Shoto didn't respond. He was already lost in thought.
I'll buy that, H replied. But what about the very first heroine demoted to hero?
I recited the line in my head a few times, trying to parse the meaning, but my brain wouldn't cooperate. It had been a mistake to so obsessively rewatch that crash footage for some sign of Samantha. Now all I could think about were all of those charred human corpses I'd seen littering the park where her jet had made impact. The bodies of at least a dozen people. People that Anorak had already killed without hesitation.
Come on, Z, H said when I failed to respond. You must have some ideas.
I don't know, I muttered, vigorously scratching my scalp in an attempt to jumpstart my brain. I suppose it could be a reference to Ranma One-Half? A heroine demoted to hero?
I was grasping at straws and H knew it.
Come on, Z, she said. Ranma was a boy who changed into a girl, not the other way around. And besides, the clue reads, the very first heroine.
Right, I said. You're right, sorry.
We stared at the inscription on the shard in silence while Faisal watched anxiously from across the room, his eyes wide with fascination. As precious seconds continued to tick away, I began to wonder if I was going to have to swallow my rapidly dwindling pride and call Lohengrin.
Come on, H whispered. It can't be that hard. Og found the second shard 10 minutes after he found the first one.
Gee, I wonder why, I said. Do you think maybe Og knows a little more about his ex-wife than we do? He was only married to her for 18 years.
H was about to reply when Shoto spoke up, cutting her off.
I don't think the first line is about Kira, Shoto said. Her paint and her canvas.